spirit of the time for me when that memo was written. People, somebody asked me yesterday, so why did you? That was actually a guy was going through. I was going through customers, and he said, "So, you've been knighted?" I said, "Yes." And he said, "Why?" And you know, customs official. So I would say, "You've got to answer the truth." Because somebody had to, and I was frustrated that it didn't exist. And that's more, you know, that's more or less it. They were working at CERN. It was a very interesting place. In fact, a fantastic place to work because it was a microcosm of the rest of the world, a little bit advanced. It had lots of different nationalities working together. It did not have a very strong hierarchical IT management, so it allowed people to come with different computers from different places on the planet, with different operating systems and different documentation systems, and they all made different pieces of computer equipment, of physics and experiment equipment, which had to be fitted together. And when they did that, they managed to get the pieces of hardware and software to fit together, but pieces of documentation about how it all works were all on different computers. And strangely enough, they would be on a computer though. They weren't on paper, because somebody, even if you saw it on paper, it was distributed on paper, it had been made on a computer, and it was actually on a disk somewhere. And just about at that time in history, at the end of the 80s, that computer was more likely than not to be connected up to a network. There would be a wire trailing out the back of it, which would be connected in something. And the internet had just spread outside the borders of the US. It had come across to Europe, who had sort of resisted it, but eventually given it. And it was getting connected up at CERN. So I was in the sort of the right place and realized that actually it's only a software problem to imagine that all those documentation systems, at the moment I had to go to log on to individually, log on to different computers and use different programs and then sort of accumulate my results on with a pen on the back of an envelope when I accumulate my knowledge. It was, in fact, if you could imagine all those documents as being part of an imaginary big system, then actually that imaginary big system could be written. It was just a question of software to actually produce it. And so I talked about it with sort of at parties and then and wrote the memo. The memo was dated in 1989. Actually, well, it's one of the first, pretty much the first landmark that we can see of something published, something out there, but it actually nobody really knew what to do with it for more than a year. And somebody said, "So what happened to that hypertext project here?" And I said, "Well, I sent you a memo about it." They said, "Oh, could you send me it again?" So okay, so I sent it around with March 1989, May 1989, just to rub it in. You should have seen this before. And CERN didn't have a process for doing software projects, really. So, but fortunately, Mike Sendell let me do it as a sort of spare time project between other real projects. And why was it so difficult then back then to get people to understand that this would be a really, really neat idea? It's because it was a paradigm shift. So all the things that the people on these clips that we've heard, when they say the web is, the web for them is some part of their world, and things like click and things like homepage are all part of the vocabulary, and they're part of the language they use for communicating with other people. It's part of the culture. So it wasn't then part of the culture. The words didn't exist. You couldn't, you know, hypertext was a very obscure thing, rather frightening. And generally people, it was generally associated with the phrase lost in hypertext, because on the early hypertext experiments that left people lost, even when they were only restricted to running around on a CD. So people, there was no, it was very difficult to explain. You could show somebody, and I did, a web page, and say, "Look, this is the idea. You see, this one is underlined here. When you click on it, then look, another one appears." And the original time, I thought it was underlined in black, because the next, I did it on the back of my key. And then originally, the first browser pops up a new window every time you follow the next thing. And so I say, "Look, you see, you click on it, and it brings this up." And it's a big deal, right? So, why is that exciting? You know, I click on, there are lots of things on my computer. I click on it, and something else, something happens. I see some more stuff. So the difficult thing to explain in those days was that potentially that could link to any information you can imagine. And then you come back and think, what is there out there? Well, there's a website about the World Wide Web and about how to build a website. So initially getting the ball rolling was difficult because of the network value, the network Metcalfe law that the value of the network is, the value of each single network is proportional to other things. Yes, what's hand you sell the first telephone, its value is zero because there aren't any other telephones to call. You have to sell the first few phones to people who believe it would be really cool to have a phone if lots of people bought phones. And there are some people who will get themselves phones under those circumstances. And what is interesting now is here we are, that we're 20 years on, and actually life is still the same. Yeah, the web, everybody understands the web as it is now. But in fact, what happened then was I managed to make a system, and it managed to take off because of the people who got it. It was a system for putting the documents, as I said, on the web. But the data files, or the spreadsheets, or the physics data, even things like calendars now. We have calendars on our desktop. We have calendars on our laptop machine, where we can subscribe to different calendars. We can merge calendars, and we can do data-like things with them. We can look at them by day view or week view or year view, and we can search through them and things. We treat a calendar feed as data. But then if you go to a website about, for example, this, I haven't, but imagine if this event was on the web, it would be on there as a document. I'd have to actually write it down on, guess what, the same old back of an envelope that I've still got from the phone days, you know, which I use for scribbling down what it is, and then if I want to put it into my PDA, I don't have to type it in, or put it into my computer. If I want to tell my computer that actually at this time I am doing something, I'm attending an event, I can't just say to it, as it shows me there, I can't say that this is the computer showing me this data. I can't show it. I can't say to it, yeah, that event, I'm going to go to it. And so I ought to be able to right-click on those things. And what's happened is that over the last 20 years, we've concentrated on documents of all forms, including movies and sound and 3D things, but they're all basically documents which have dominated the web. And it's only now that we've got these common languages that we're really pushing to put data on the web. We're putting data out there as linked data. And as we go around and say to people, you know, you put documents on the web, can you put the data on the web, please? We're back. We're doing exactly the same thing. Say why? So okay, so we want to put data on the web. So what's the point of it? Well, it would be really cool if everybody did. Okay, so what data have you got on there at the moment? Well, you know, a few years ago, well, we didn't have very much, and we have a little bit of data that academic people put on. But now what's happened is just recently this linked data thing has started to take off. Has it taken off? Because there has been, you know, because there's been big management decisions that linked data would be a good idea. No, it's because some people get it. So a few people out there just scraped data out of the Wikipedia information boxes. They took databases, existing public databases. They found data which was available and already had an open access license, and they converted it into these new data formats. And I'm supposed to talk about the web, but actually, well, I can do one of the things the BBC can't do. When you're in the BBC and you're not supposed to spend all your time talking about the BBC, of course. Well, let me just mention that there is, in fact, a fantastic resource on the web that some folks in the BBC have done. That there's, in fact, data on the web. There was linked data on the web at bbc.co.uk/programs. Yes, it's there in human readable corpus documents, but also there is a data resource which is extremely rich because some people in the BBC get it, and they're in the room that I went to Marison, Tom. So, but that is great, and it is an example of BBC. The BBC is, if you like, leading and doing cool things like making a program in which actually the generation of the program itself is the product, which is turning things upside down. But also, they're also putting data on the web, which is going to be very important because to a greater and greater extent, if you don't have data about your products out there, people won't find them, people won't reuse that data, and you don't know where people are going to reuse that data. So we're going through another paradigm shift. Now, it's been widely rumored that the British government has asked some of us, Nigel and me, for example, to give them a hand putting data on the web. And that's because some people in the British government got it that actually putting data on the web is important. Of course, there's a big pull for people who want to see that government data because it often is kind of like, not really the government's data, it's actually all our data to see it on the web. There are some, but there are also people who realize it's sort of not just about seeing particular pieces of government data. It's about that data being a framework. It's about giving identifiers to all the counties, to all the administrative areas, to all the towns, to all the roads, to all the things which are part of our lives, so that we can start connecting together the data, so we can build websites, so we can build industries, so that commercial things will run. So there are people who get it, and it's starting to take off. And it's kind of, so I was asked to look back. And so here I am looking back and thinking, yes, sort of, yes, it's changed, but on the other hand, in some ways, it's very much the same. So, well, there are, every time we make go through a major shift, there's a paradigm shift, and you have to look for the people to get it, and support them, and cherish them, and let them talk to each other. And one of the cool things, for example, with linked data, is we've got these, there are meetup groups in various cities across the planet, there's maybe 20 of them, where people once a month get together, just people who think it's really cool. And you'll find there some, you'll find there maybe a few academics who are studying it, you find maybe a few commercial people who've got products in the area, you find people who are using it, you maybe find, for example, life, at MIT we have a, we host a meeting once a month, and a bunch of life science people come there because they really use it. And also you see some venture capitalists coming along to see what's happening, and sometimes you get some get-togethers there which creates spin-offs and so on. So it's very exciting, and I think the looking back over the 20 years, if you have to look at all the various pieces of technology and all the various milestones that we went through, the really important thing for me has been the spirit of it. The spirit of it is a grassroots phenomenon. The spirit of people doing it because they thought it was a good idea, because they realized it was a really good idea. That's why most of the websites originally were put together. That's it was done because people realized it would be really cool. They could visualize what would happen if everybody else did it. And so that spirit has made it really, it's made it very exciting. It's made it, and it's allowed anybody to get involved. The only things that bosses had to do, like Mike Sandel, back there, he wrote Vegan Cycle, and we didn't see that. I don't think I saw the paper, and he died, unfortunately, 10 years later. He didn't let me do it. And later on, somebody pointed out, as they went through his possessions, that he'd written vague, but exciting. But that was enough for him to, the vagueness he swallowed, and the excitement he went along with, and all basically he didn't say no. He let me use a bit of space. All over the place, things happened on the web because people didn't say no. Because there were people who were at the grassroots doing exciting things, who picked up a bit of the vision you could see from the twinkle in their eye, and there were people who didn't say no, who let them, and eventually had the smarts to realize, to cherish them. So the way the semantic web we've seen has spread through the life sciences is from a few people, a few champions within different life sciences, different pharmaceutical companies, getting hold of it, a few software companies, putting it across. And first they're preaching to a bunch of people who are rather skeptical, and then they get a call from a VP who is going out to talk to a customer, and the customer wants to know what sort of semantic web support they've got. And suddenly, so can you send me your slides, anything on semantic web? I'll read it out on the plane, because it's important. So, please, that's one of the cinnamon shows in a way. It's still people working together. Of course, looking forward, it's all people. People are working on lots of different areas of the technology. The semantic web is one. A huge one is the fact that the web is moving into mobile area. So there are more mobile devices than there are these things. There are more web browsers on mobile devices than there are web browsers on laptops. What's exciting about that is not actually just that you're executives who carry these things and get jet around the place will be able to browse the web while they're waiting in the waiting room without the laptop. It is that in developing countries, of course, people have phones where they don't have computers. And to a certain extent, there's a certain level of people who have phones with web browsers, but don't have computers. So one of the exciting things that some of us are excited about with the other hats on, like with the World Weather Foundation hat, is that whereas the web at the moment is only used by 20% of the planet, it's possible that we get very much more of the planet actually with access as they get phones, and those phones have simple web browsers. So one of the things we have to make sure is that it works for them, that we don't just target everything in HD, in three dimensions, whatever the next new thing is, at the early adopter. We also have to have to make sure that we target things in low resolution, low bandwidth, to people out there. But also we have to realize that one of the things which when you talk to anybody, for example, about going to Africa, about how people use technology, is they all say, it is incredible how whatever the technology is, they are really, really creative with it. Well, guess what? They're human beings, and human beings are creative. So one of the things we've got to realize as well is as people, more people get connected, it is their creativity which is going to, the important thing is we must enable them to create a web that they need and that they want, and they will, if they're enabled, if they're given an open internet platform, a neutral internet platform, they will do that. And then we will, we must not think that we will be feeding our culture. We must realize that their culture is going to be coming back very strongly, and that is going to be very exciting for the world. So that all of the, all those hopes, in a way, are hanging on the web getting onto mobile technology. There are other things that are happening in the web, of course. There are new standards being produced, new protocols. HTML is even being revised, and so it's easier, for example, to put video in it. There are, when each of these kind of standards comes out, then people have to get, technologies come out, people have to get together and meet in standards groups to actually make sure that all the machines speak the same language. That was true back then, it's true now. So, and there are people in this room who do that, who work together and help make standards. So they should be bought beers, because that, you know, that is hard work, involves a lot of flying around and missed bedtime stories and missed episodes of your favorite, whatever, to go and make these discussions. But that's actually what keeps the web one web. And so you should recognize that and join in and do it. So that will continue as well. The importance of keeping these open standards continues. The importance of keeping it royalty free has been really, really important. So as we go into the future, maybe the people in this room have got ideas that I, you know, for technologies I've never thought of, and let them. It's very important that we nurture these people, nurture these new ideas. We don't try to constrain them. And as they go out, we make sure that they are open and royalty free. Thanks.